Welcome to the BizNews Daybreak on Thursday, the 5th of March, 2026. I'm Alec Hogg. Here's the sharp, actionable news you need to stay ahead today. Let's get straight into it. Well, a big rebound on Wall Street last night. We saw the S&P 500 index up 0.75%, NASDAQ up 1.25%. Some big movers amongst the favorite BizNews stocks. But Bitcoin is the big story, up 7.25% last night. It's now at $72,500. The hodlers are going to be celebrating after a little while in the doldrums. Bitcoin does seem to be making a comeback. And according to those on the inside, it's because Iranians are now stocking up on Bitcoin. A lot easier to put your wealth there than into gold. But gold's still doing okay. It's $5,200 an ounce. The rand seems to be stabilizing at a weaker level now, at 16 rand 40 as we go into the day. Big moves on Wall Street last night, though, came from Palantir, which was up by 4%, Tesla 3.5%, Amazon 3.8%. So that gives you an idea that some of the tech stocks are now very much back in favor. Here in South Africa, biggest mover was yesterday's biggest loser. Biggest loser on Tuesday, and that's Afrimat in our portfolio. Afrimat was up by 10% last night. Other stocks to do very well were Northern Platinum and Valterra Platinum, the old Anglo Plats. Those up by more than 5%. Nice to see Pick and Pay also in there amongst the big winners, 3.5% yesterday. Losers locally, the coal stock, Thungela down 6%, Sasol lost 5%, and ArcelorMittal was 4% lower. Spar, which is seemingly going from one crisis to the next, lost 3.5% last night. Yesterday in South Africa, and it's now 55% down in the past year. Quilter, which came out with financial results, was down by 3.33%, but it's still up 14% in the past year. Well, for the latest on the Iran war and other relevant news, here's the partners of ours at Bloomberg with their late night news report, that side, which is early morning hours.
Senate Republicans have voted down a war powers resolution to halt President Trump's actions against Iran. Now, this demonstrates early support for a conflict with no clear U.S. exit strategy, and the war is showing no sign of slowing down. WTI crude oil wavered just below $75. That was after the New York Times reported Iranian intelligence operatives reached out to the CIA through another country's spy agency with an offer to discuss terms for ending the conflict. However, later in the day, Tehran dismissed the report as a pure falsehood. And now we are learning Kurdish-Iranian dissident groups based in northern Iraq are preparing for a potential cross-border military operation in Iran. Kurdish groups are widely seen as the most well-organized segment of Iranian opposition. Earlier today, Israel and U.S. forces bombed more targets in the Islamic Republic, and a U.S. submarine sank an Iranian warship in international waters. President Trump expressed confidence in the U.S. military campaign against Iran.
Somebody said, on a scale of 10, where would you rate it? I said, about a 15. And we're going to continue to do well. We have the greatest military in the world by far.
At the same time, the Pentagon said the U.S. will strike deeper into Iran. Here is Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth.
More and larger waves are coming. We are just getting started. We are accelerating, not decelerating. Iran's capabilities are evaporating by the hour, while American strength grows fiercer, smarter, and utterly dominant. More bombers and more fighters are arriving just today.
Meantime, former Secretary of State Antony Blinken said real change in Iran will require a sustained focus from the U.S. military, and that could wear down stockpiles of U.S. weapons. Blinken told Bloomberg that he worries about a scenario where the U.S. depletes its arsenal. Last week, negotiations between Anthropic and the Department of Defense broke down over the Pentagon's use of the company's Claude AI model, and that left Anthropic at risk of being frozen out of the military supply supply chain. Well, now, Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei is reportedly making a last-ditch effort to revive those talks. The Financial Times reports Amodei has been in discussions with the Pentagon's Undersecretary for Research and Engineering about finalizing a contract for the military's access to Anthropic's AI technology. A federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to stop calculating emergency tariffs for importers. The judge also questioned why the government was continuing to do so after the Supreme Court ruled those tariffs illegal. And at the same time, the judge told the Trump administration to speed up the process of refunding importers for those levies.
More now from Joe Biden's Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, the immediate former holder of that portfolio. And it's a useful nonpartisan perspective on a war that, as we heard earlier, seems to be very much in the by jingo, let's do it stage in the United States.
One of the striking features so far is that Iran has launched far more missiles and far more drones at the Arab countries in the Gulf and in the region than it has even at Israel, disproportionately so. And in part, that's because we have bases and a presence there, but they've gone beyond that. They've gone at infrastructure that these countries have, the oil infrastructure. They want to try to inflict so much pain that we can't sustain the effort. And that's something that should have been anticipated. And David, I think we're looking at a couple of things going forward in terms of where does this go and how does this end? And it seems to me that there are two critical factors to look at, markets and munitions. Markets. Where are the oil markets? Where's the stock market? Where's the bond market? I know President Trump is very attentive to those. And if they go in a southerly direction and stay that way, or in the case of oil, in a northerly direction, that's going to be possibly a limiting factor. Then munitions. There's really a race on to figure out who expends their munitions first and fastest. Do the Iranians put us in a position where we've used up a lot of interceptors to deal with defense, or even our offensive missiles to take out their launchers? Or conversely, do they run out and we still have what we need? I don't know the numbers here. I'm not privy to that. But it is something we have to be very, very attentive to, because these things are not in infinite supply. The production times are very long. And, of course, we're also using in many cases, very expensive weapons to take down $20,000 drones. That's not a good equation if you keep that going over time. What I'm worried about, one of the things I'm worried about, and this gets to the second and third order consequences, is we so deplete our arsenal, and it takes a long time to rebuild it, that puts us in a disadvantageous position when it comes to, say, a China or a Russia. All of those things need to be factored in. And, again, it's one of the reasons why if you're going to undertake something like this, you've got to make sure that you've factored all of that in. And, again, it really should start with explaining to the American people why you're doing something, why it's necessary, why now.
Do you see an off-ramp anywhere at this point?
I do, in the sense that, one, as I said, I think the off-ramp will be governed by this question of munitions and markets. Mm-hmm. And then what is that off-ramp? I think the president may simply declare victory. He'll say, got rid of the Ayatollah. We diminished or degraded or destroyed their nuclear program again. We did the same thing to the missile program. We did the same thing to the Navy. And as to the regime, well, over to the Iranian people. Good luck to them. Hope they succeed. And if they don't, it's their fault. If they do, we'll take the credit.
Locally, the mountain that South Africa must climb to reestablish public safety was laid bare yesterday when it was revealed that citizen trust in our criminal justice system scores a dismal 4 in 100. 4%. 96% of citizens in our country do not trust the criminal justice system, I suppose partly because of what we've been witnessing through the live transmission of the Madlanga and ad hoc parliamentary committee that was sparked by disclosures in July by the KZN head of the South African Police Services, Nhlanhla Nkwanazi. Action Society yesterday unveiled its criminal justice trust indicator, and the baseline findings serve as a massive wake-up call for South Africa. My BizNews colleague Chris Steyn sat down with Action Society's Juanita Dupria. Here's a clip from that interview.
How does it measure public trust in the justice system? We asked many questions on this survey in which people could take part of their own free will. I don't want to say it's shocking because I think the results show that everybody knows this, but it should be such a wake-up call for the whole criminal justice system to see that a ranking of 4 out of 100, you get a 4 out of 100. If you add up all the questions and answers and so on, most of them are over 95%. People do not believe that if a crime is committed against them, they will get justice. That's the short and the sweet of the survey. The public pressure should be listened to because this is how people feel about the criminal justice system. It feels, I'm not even going to go to a police station and say something happened with me because I don't trust that anything is going to happen. So we have a skewed picture of crime happening in the country because it's not reported, because people believe there will be no justice. So we can think it's getting better, but it's actually just getting more underreported. And that's very, very worrying. It's a complete system overhaul that we need. And we believe that decentralizing so that we can do public-private partnerships is the first tangible thing to be implemented, and it will bring results.
It's a huge day over in the East for South Africa's largest trading partner as the Chinese Communist Party hosts its annual jamboree. That happens today, and this year's unveiling includes the latest, that's the 15th five-year plan. Here's the Financial Times' Beijing Bureau Chief Joe Lay talking to the FT News Briefing host Victoria Craig.
One of the key things at this annual meeting is always the growth target. The government delivers the so-called work report, which details all of the activities that it's been doing over the past year and its plans for the coming year, especially for the economy. And this year we'll be expecting them to perhaps even change the target, which will be the first time in a few years, to around 4.5 to 5% for this year. And that would compare to last year's target, which was in quotes, around 5%. So that'll be a pretty big change, acknowledging that China's economy is gradually slowing. And then they'll also release the 15th five-year plan. And we think that will be emphasizing high-tech development first and foremost, and also with some hopes of fueling consumption.
Does China generally meet these targets?
They always mysteriously do meet the target. There have been exceptions, such as during COVID, but normally they do meet it. And the way they do that is through economic stimulus. So if they find that they're falling short of the target, they'll issue a whole lot more bonds and build a lot more infrastructure, undertake a lot more investment until they feel like they've met the target. But of course, China's economic data has been heavily questioned by economists over the years. It's always a little bit questionable whether they are actually meeting the target, but they certainly say that they do.
You mentioned that the tech sector is a focus. What are the other sectors you're going to be watching for?
One of the really interesting things might be whether or not the government actually sets some targets for consumption, because the thing, obviously, that's really missing in the Chinese economy at the moment is consumption. There is a lack of demand in the Chinese economy leading to huge exports and that massive surplus last year that has upset China's trading partners. So economists will be looking for more clarity on whether they'll set targets for consumption, which also requires them to boost people's incomes. But I'm not too optimistic that they'll do much on that front. I think tech is still the highest priority, and that's because of competition with the US. Above all, they want to win that contest.
What other policies are the delegates going to discuss?
Yeah, another really interesting piece of legislation that's supposed to be discussed there is inheritance tax. With China's demographic decline, we are going to see this large group of people who've benefited from the past 40 years of economic growth. They are going to hand over their wealth to a much smaller number of people in the next generation. So the party really wants to get a piece of this in terms of taxation. But still, they know that this is a very unpopular tax, and they'll be working very carefully on how they can get it through.
So, Joe, that's what the government is prioritizing. But people can also have their voices heard. So what's on their minds heading into the Congress?
Yeah, one of the features of the Chinese People's Political Consultative Committee, which is the main advisory body, the delegates to this body are quite often people from the wider society. They're not all officials, and they can actually put in proposals, basically ideas on how to improve society. And this year, one of those is to actually crack down on overtime so that couples and families have more time, and there's a greater willingness to actually have children as well.
Joe Lay is the FT's Beijing bureau chief.
Back on the investing beat, mining guru Peter Major reckons it's foolish to simply buy the market or even a sector. In this environment, you need to be very selective. And in our discussion yesterday for the Mining Web Weekly, Peter shared quite a lot of his current views on particular stocks. It's well worth going along and absorbing that. He, of course, will be one of the gurus who will be hosting the investment masterclass at the Biz News Conference next week. There are still tickets left. So as a stock picker, and that's what we're looking at now, would you be looking at Anglo American, given the deal that's been done with tech and turning them into such a powerhouse in the copper industry?
No, and I was thinking about that today because brokers, analysts are talking about Anglo's re-rating. I think it's re-rated enough. I think if they figure there's more re-rating coming, they're being overly optimistic. Anglo's and Billiton, especially Anglo's. Anglo's did well most of last year compared to where it was. It was leading Billiton. Billiton's done a fast catch-up. But when I see a figure that says Anglo's is now 8% copper, and I see copper at 13,000 a ton, and I see stocks are building up all over the world now. You know, China has excess smelter capacity. They're smelting virtually for free. Just give them your concentrate, and maybe they get a few of the byproducts, or they pay you only 80, 90%. But there's a big buildup, not just in LME warehouses, all over. And so I just think 13,000 is too high. Everybody's making tons of money. And the first rule I've learned in business is everybody is not allowed to make a lot of money all the time. Mm-hmm. Huh? You know, there's something wrong. I think Anglo's, it's not rich, but no, I'm a guy who waits for pullbacks, darn it. I'll find something else to invest in. But yeah, whether it's maybe some more Jubilee, maybe I'll nibble some Orion here. I won't buy as much as I could until I see what the rights issue is. But yeah, I'm into buying mines that have not discounted this huge price increase. And Anglo's, I think, is discounted. It was a great merger. It was done well. I think it's a good fit. The market's rewarded it. If 80% of that company is copper and copper's 13,000 plus, their stock's building up rapidly now. I think that's as good as we're going to see it. I think you're risky now buying it and thinking you're going to make another 10 or 15% this year.
Well, we close off today's show with the Normandein farm invasion. Yeah, we're not going to let this go. What happens when political grandstanding collides with private business? Well, in this clip from an interview that I had yesterday with Sean Hudson, who runs the farm side of the family business, where the politicians invaded, we get some detail on what they were supposedly looking for. And there's also a clip from a local business person who identifies the central character as a EFF firebrand called Lucky Shabalala. Well, after a compliance audit at Normandein Farms turned up absolutely nothing, the politicians and the assorted mob resorted to shutting the operation down, the sawmill operation down, over dust, without even walking the site or providing a hygiene report.
There were people just roamed around the site. They weren't escorted by anybody. We had members of parliament making videos, releasing videos of what was going on without any context, without understanding what was going on, calling us racist employees, just absolute lack of control and respect, Alec.
Was there any pretext for the arrival? In other words, were they looking for perhaps illegal immigrants working for you or for some problem that you had created or allegedly created?
No. What we picked up on social media after the visit was they were looking for illegal employees. Obviously, they didn't find any. They were expecting to find many violations. They didn't find any. They did a compliance audit. They found all the documentation that was required. They found an order. They found no findings on any of the legal compliance issues that we comply with. And as a result of that, Alec had to try and find something to close us down. I had a chat with the site manager this morning, and he was telling me that the labor inspectors actually physically didn't walk around the site. They issued us a prohibition notice from their offices, having not found any non-compliance issues. And one of the issues they shut us down for was dust. And they're trying to produce, we wanted to produce the hygiene, a hygiene sorter, which we had done, which indicates where dust masks are required, where dust masks are not required. They weren't interested in that. They wanted to shut the site down.
I come from that area, or left many years ago, true, but I've had quite a bit of response to this. A friend of mine, Douglas Welsh, who I grew up with, said that he's had a similar issue with a small boutique private hospital that he has in an area called Hilldrop, which is, I suppose, also in the southern part of town. And then I got a WhatsApp.
Yeah, it was there at the sawmills at Normandine Farms. I don't know, about a month ago already, they stormed the sawmills there and broke through the security. And yeah, so it was actually just, the police were there and a flipping assault rifles, and it was quite a big thing. But yeah, I think it's actually more political parties, trying to win votes. We've got a guy here by the name of Lucky Shabalala. Yes, he just causes a shit as far as he goes. He's an EFF man. And he's not really getting any support out the area. You know? So the soak is now, previously he's given the sawmills and Thirsty a hell of a lot of shit. And touchwood, I haven't been affected by the labour inspections, but I know there's quite a few farmers that have had quite a bit of problems with labour inspection, and it's all he's to do.
Do you know this Lucky Shabalala fella?
Yes, we have come across him from time to time over the years. He purports to represent community interests, and he's just in it for himself.
Was he the instigator of all of this? Because I find it really strange that you've got MPs who aren't even from the area coming in to do this surprise inspection. First of all, I don't know if they're allowed to by law, but secondly, why don't they go and look in their own areas?
Yeah. So again, through this process, we did pick up that they were in Newcastle, really around the textile industry, checking for illegal factories and everything that goes on in that sector, which I'm not familiar with. But I think they just use it as an opportunity to come and find a large employer and just harass them for social media likes. I mean, if you've seen all the social media stuff, I've seen footage from Kusatu, I've seen footage from the Barmer Label, I've seen footage from I think his name is Vuo Zungula. He as well, again, completely off point. So it was really to try and highlight to the masses what parliamentarians are, how they're earning their money.
Thank you for joining us for today's BizNews Daybreak. To stay ahead of the curve and read more from our expert contributors, be sure to visit biznews.com. And if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and share it with your network. I'm Alec Hogg, wishing you a prosperous day. I'll be back tomorrow.